Our guest speaker today is President of the Illinois Senate. As he does each year, he honors us again today by delivering his, this is my term, State of the State address at the City Club of Chicago. Our next speaker presides over the largest Senate caucus in America and the largest Senate Democratic caucus in the history of Illinois. He is a graduate of Loyola University and Loyola University Law School. Our guest today is so smart that he brought his wife, Pam, with him today. Let's give her a round of applause, Pam. And both the president and Pam are the proud parents of five beautiful children. Ladies and gentlemen, John Cullerton. Mr. President.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today. Leader Redonio sends her regards. She wishes she could be here, and I wish she could be here too, but she's in Springfield. So let's get right to the point. Illinois hasn't had a budget in 2 years. Let me put this down. Illinois hasn't had a budget in 2 years. I'm going to read you one sentence about that impasse. During that time, sexual assault victims were frozen out of counseling. Homeless teens and domestic violence survivors were kicked to the curb. Breast cancer screenings were eliminated. And large and formerly stable charities like Lutheran Social Services of Illinois, as well as small and vulnerable service providers, laid off thousands of staff members and discontinued programs. That's from a recent Rich Miller newspaper column. That's a lot of horrible for one sentence. It smacks you in the face. It makes you uncomfortable, and it should. But that's where we are. That's what we've become as a state. So today, I want to talk to you about the realities we face, go over the Senate's plan to do something about it, and explain what happens if we're not successful. More importantly, I'm here to ask for your support and your help. If you want this gridlock to end, lawmakers need to hear from you. Call them, email them, tag them on Facebook and Twitter. Here's the key point. If not this plan, then what? If not now, then when? Illinois has never gone this long without a budget. Getting out of this mess is not going to be easy. Lawmakers need to take tough votes. Trust me, lawmakers don't like taking tough votes. And it certainly doesn't help when, from the past few weeks, every interested lobbyist in the state has been telling them this part or that part of the plan is a deal breaker. For perspective, our grand bargain legislation was introduced on January 9th. Between that date and the end of the month, 867 lobbyists registered with the state. They're the ones that filled out witness slips at hearings to oppose our efforts, witness slips that filled 188 pages. Now, I don't fault them entirely. That's the job of a lobbyist, to protect his or her client's interest. That's what they get paid to do. But lawmakers need to see the big picture, see beyond the special interest, and do something to save our state. I like the way that the Sun-Times summed it up. The particulars of the deal are in flux, but the concept is politically sound. Everybody wins, everybody loses, and to hell with the single-issue lobbyist. So every day we don't act is another $11 million we go in debt. The problem is only getting worse, making the solution all the more difficult. So let's go back and revisit parts of that one horrible sentence I read to you at the beginning. Sexual assault victims were frozen out of counseling. That means that when a woman who's been raped calls a hotline for help, they might not be able to do anything to help her find a place to stay or get immediate counseling. Breast cancer screenings were eliminated. that means women with cancer scares are told to wait. That's not how you address cancer. What the state is doing to these women is morally and medically wrong. And here's the really sad part. They can get services once they have advanced cancer symptoms, such as a lump in the breast or abnormal bleeding. That's the state's message and policy on women's health these days. It's unacceptable. Large charities like Lutheran Social Services of Illinois, as well as small and vulnerable providers, laid off thousands of staff members and discontinued programs. Let's remember, these charities, these organizations are businesses. They employ people. When they lay off workers, those people go to the same unemployment line that anyone else who's lost a job. The state is contracting with these businesses for services and then not paying them. That's forcing layoffs, massive layoffs. Last year, Lutheran Social Services cut 30 programs and laid off 750 workers because the state hadn't paid the businesses millions of dollars for work that was done. A United Way survey last year of 429 social service businesses across Illinois found that 91% had cut back client services, meaning 1 million people who needed mental health, substance abuse, or childhood education help were not getting it anymore. And I wish it stopped there, but it doesn't. Our emergency budget ran out on December 31st. That left public universities and community colleges with no public support in 2017, after more than $1 billion in cuts in recent years. Those cuts have damaged our reputation and our economy. High school counselors recommend graduates look elsewhere for their degrees. Enrollment is falling at dangerous rates. Eastern Illinois University saw a 13% drop last year. Meanwhile, students attending Illinois schools on state-funded MAP grant scholarships are left in limbo, wondering if their schools will float them for another semester in hopes that the state will get its act together. And this all takes a human toll. Memorial Hospital in Carbondale reports a growing number of people coming in and being placed on suicide watch. As the budget impasse drags on, at the same time, state cuts force the local university, Southern Illinois, to consider eliminating counseling and psychological services for students. People across the state are making impossible choices because the people at the Capitol haven't been able to get together to take tough votes. On top of all of it, Wall Street doesn't like us either. Illinois has the worst credit rating in the nation. We just got downgraded again last week, and there's more on the way. Our problems are unprecedented. There's no easy solutions. So, in the Senate, we're proposing an unprecedented deal. More than a dozen proposals addressing everything from the missing 2017 budget plan to reforms of government pensions and workers' compensation, to government consolidation, and an overhaul of how we fund public schools. We're all linked in a grand bargain. It's a compromise in the truest form, something we don't see enough of in Springfield. If we can pull this off, we will pay businesses on time, fully fund MAP scholarships, ensure state workers get paid and government doesn't shut down, assemble a complete budget for the first time in 2 years, and put Illinois on the path to a balanced budget. We will also save billions in pension costs, give voters the power to reduce Illinois' most in the nation number of local governments, and give school relief from state mandates. It's an intricate and delicate give and take designed to create a plan that can win bipartisan support among lawmakers and hopefully get the governor's signature. Here's how it works. On one hand, there's an increase to the earned income tax credit, which reduces poverty by rewarding work. And in the same proposal, there's a research and development tax credit to cut business costs and spur innovation. That's the premise throughout the entire deal. If you expect me to vote for that, I'm going to need this. That's what negotiation and compromise is all about. Yes, there's a revenue component, an increase in the state income tax, but there's also a local property tax freeze. Chicago gets financial assistance for its teacher pension costs, just like every other school district in Illinois. And there's also a pension reform statewide, including cuts to end-of-career pension spiking and eliminating the General Assembly pension system for new legislators. These are all tied together. If pension reform fails, it's all off. If school funding overhaul, workers' comp reforms, and the budget plan fail along with it, the plan fails along with it. If we're successful, the Senate will have shown that it can be done. Republicans and Democrats will have worked together to enact reforms and raise $6.5 billion to balance the budget. So next week, when Governor Rauner unveils his budget, I look forward to him walking everyone through his detailed plan to raise $6.5 billion in revenue and needed reforms to finally produce a balanced budget. And then for the first time in 2 years, people in Illinois will be able to look at two different ways to get to a balanced budget, two honest plans, and decide the best path forward. We must find success on a balanced budget because failure isn't an option, and here's why. Without a balanced budget plan, government goes on life support. Our pension payments would still be made and retirement checks would go out. Those are on autopilot. And many vital services would be funded because of court orders. We would likely try to fund employees and programs as emergencies crop up. But meanwhile, our stack of unpaid bills will grow. Our proposed mix of revenue, reforms, and cuts create a true framework for a balanced budget. The alternative is to do nothing. There are those who would have us wait and see what happens with the next election. Okay, right now the backlog of bills is around $11 billion. Left unchecked, it will grow to $13.5 billion by July. Look at that chart. See the source down in the corner? These are Governor Rauner's numbers. From there, the debt keeps growing. On Election Day 2018, it'll be roughly $24 billion. Now think about what that means. Right now, we're almost 2 years behind in paying our bills. The next governor will be paying businesses 4 years late. By then, we will have downgraded to junk bond status and no one will lend us money. The new governor will have that hung around his or her neck. I don't want to even speculate what the tax rate would need to be to try to dig out of that hole. And the problem keeps getting worse. Do nothing, and in 4 years, the backlog of overdue payments to businesses tops $40 billion, more than the actual annual cost of running our state. Several public universities will be gone by then. Those left will be hollowed out, existing on the few students who can afford tuition. Faced with skyrocketing tuition here, our students will flee in increasing greater numbers, possibly never to return. Pension costs will gobble up even larger portions of our budget. It will squeeze out education and other priorities. The disparities in our worst in the nation school funding system will actually worsen. Chicago and other schools will cut days and lay off teachers. Local property taxes will increase as homeowners shoulder more of the financial burden with no relief. But it's not all bad. The lobbyists will still get paid to oppose any and all changes down at the Capitol. So for those who have a problem with our proposed solution now, I have a question. What do you think the solution is going to look like in 2018? Do you think the choices get easier? And what do we do until then? So let me tell you again what happens while we wait. During that time, sexual assault victims will be frozen out of counseling. Homeless teens and domestic violence survivors will be kicked to the curb. Breast cancer screenings will be eliminated. And large and formerly stable charities like Lutheran Social Services of Illinois, as well as small and vulnerable service providers, will lay off thousands of staff members and discontinue programs. We have a chance to end this dysfunction. We have a chance to restore stability and sanity to our finances. I would ask for your help in convincing my colleagues that this is the right thing to do, and now is the right time to do it. Now, I see we have some of my colleagues here today. I'd like to recognize them and thank them for their backing and their support. And I'd like to thank you for your attention and your future support in lobbying those people who are here today, who came here voluntarily. They weren't subpoenaed. Iris Martinez, Senator Iris Martinez. Napoleon Harris. Napoleon. Senator Melinda Bush. Senator Don Harmon. Senator Christina Castro. Brand new senator. Still hasn't been paid. Senator Kimberly Lightford. Senator Maddie Hunter. Senator Terry Link. Senator Omar Aquino. Senator Scott Bennett. Senator Bill Cunningham. Senator Donnie Trotter. Senator Toy Hutchinson. And the Speaker of my House, Pam Cullerton. Did I miss any senators? Okay, we got Senator Kwame Raoul is here. All right, Kwame, thank you. Senator Hastings, Mike Hastings, thank you very much. And now, believe it or not, I'll be happy to answer any questions. I got it here.
Thank you, Senate President. Marlo, if I didn't know any better, I think he didn't like lobbyists. I don't know. Yes, I know he likes me, so. Got your water? Okay. Really, you guys, only two questions? Okay. Thank you. So we might as well get started with an easy one from Lawrence Massal.
From the Civic. From
yeah. Why not, right? Has violating the state constitution that requires the state to appropriate employees' salaries help bring the political will to pass a comprehensive budget? If not, then should it continue, or should Attorney General Madigan petition? You got it?
Yeah.
Lauren.
So there's a court order that said that state employees have to be paid. We have not appropriated money for that. Attorney General has indicated that she's going to challenge that order. And if she was successful, then they wouldn't be paid unless we passed an appropriation. Probably the most important bill that we have in our package is a supplemental appropriation, fully funded, to complete this current fiscal year and appropriate the money for those state workers. So the solution is found in one of our 13 bills. And so that's what we're going to do. We pass this package. That problem is solved. It wasn't an easy question.
It wasn't, was it? It wasn't. I'm so glad you like me. I really am. Lawrence used to be one of my favorite people. He still is. So, Jeff Jenkins, where are you, Jeff? Oh, it's a Twitter question. Okay. Reading is fundamental. I guess it says it right here. Local school council members, three election bills passed in House, Charter Commission bill, opt-out bill, and something ERSB, but did not make it to the Senate. Can you talk about why?
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Okay, let me talk about Chicago schools.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
The Chicago Public Schools have a huge hole in their budget because we had passed a bill appropriating $215 million for them, representing the normal cost of their pensions. something that the rest of the state already gets. The governor vetoed it. So in this bill, not only do we provide for that $215 million, but we permanently provide for the Chicago Public Schools to be treated like the rest of the state. It's called pension parity, and that will also be something that will be automatically appropriated, just like every other's pension bill. It'll plug that hole for the Chicago Public Schools, avoid about 2,000 teachers being laid off. And in addition, we will have a new school funding formula that I will present to my caucus tomorrow, because we just finished the details of it this weekend. And I believe it's something that will be politically palatable to just about everybody in the state. We have the worst, most unfair funding formula in the nation. Everybody agrees with that, and this will change that. And as a result, not only Chicago, but many other poor school districts will benefit. So that's another very important part of the package.
Tim, Colleen from U of I, are you around here somewhere? Okay. There they are, okay. So the question is, how can higher ed and the private sector be better energized to raise the tax base?
Good question.
Yeah, how can higher ed be better energized to raise the tax base? Well, higher ed has taken a hit. And we're currently in fiscal year 17, and in June, we vote on fiscal year 18. I think higher education collectively has been cut by over $1 billion, but $1.2 billion, I think. So what we're going to try to do with this budget is, once again, you have no spending authority right now. We're going to give you a supplemental appropriation so you can pay the MAP grants for the rest of the year, of the fiscal year, and then have enough money for the fiscal year 18 to have a budget. Now, we haven't voted on the budget that starts July 1st yet. That'll be done in May. But we'll have enough money with reasonable cuts, if you will, to have a balanced budget going forward. And so keep in mind that all of these bills are tied together. The good has to come with the bad. So urging legislators to vote for all of them is the best way to help us pass any one of them.
Jim Borton, where are you? From World on Fire Films. Can you talk about the effect of the recent appointment of the former state comptroller? What will it have on the budget impasse?
No. The governor is going to give a budget next Wednesday. I think it's fair to say that he hasn't given a balanced budget the first two times around. I understand, because it's hard giving a balanced budget, because you have to propose revenues, right, to balance the budget. He hasn't done that. But now he has a plan, a specific plan to compare it to, hopefully with Republicans supporting it. We'll find out in the next few days. So once we do that, he then can propose a true balanced budget. And hopefully the former comptroller, can help him in that goal.
Dave Lundy, are you here? There he is. How many Republican votes must you have before you're willing to put your caucus on the grand budget?
Yeah. So there's 13 different bills. Some bills it's easier for Republicans to vote for, and some bills it's easier for Democrats to vote for. We have to pass each bill with 30 votes. And so this is a big step forward for, and I applaud Republican leader Redonio coming forward and actually initiating this process. And she's getting lobbied heavily against this package, just as Democrats are. So we'll see what happens. We haven't had the vote yet. But we'll have a caucus tomorrow. We'll explain the final details, and we'll go to the floor, and this week we have to take a vote. So we'll find out.
Peter Lando, are you here? You should be a writer. A few years ago, we had a pension plan, and it didn't go so well. At the 11th hour, the House Speaker changed some things around. What will it take to have him
It's probably constitutional.
Participate in the process. I'm missing that part right there. Dr. Green speaking from above, talking about legibility. I don't know what that says. What's the word? Constructively. Oh, okay.
Okay. So first of all, with regard to the House, we haven't talked to the House. We haven't talked to the governor about this whole package. We're working together with the Senate to see if we can pass a bill. It would be premature to talk to them because we don't even know if we can pass it. One of the elements in the bill is a pension reform bill. The brief history of pension reform is that we have passed first about, I don't know, 5 years ago, a bill that dramatically reduced people's pensions for new hires. That's about 25% of all the teachers and state workers now are under that. It's called a Tier 2 pension. We also then passed a bill, it was called Senate Bill 1. I always felt it was unconstitutional, but we felt we did need to have a test case in the Supreme Court, and we were right. It was unconstitutional, unanimously found that way, and that failed. But by reading that opinion, we found that there's a way, we think, to pass a bill which is constitutional, doesn't save as much money as the unconstitutional one, because that saved, you know, that was supposed to save a lot, but it saved zero. So this is a tough vote, but it's a bill that will eventually save $1 billion worth of money a year. And that $1 billion will then be available to pump right back in to our school system, our higher education system, and human services. If this bill is also unconstitutional, it doesn't wreck the grand bargain. It's not tied, the constitutionality of the law is not tied to the success of this package. So it's something the governor has asked for, the Republicans have asked for. We have passed a bill like this in the past with union support. They don't support it now, but it's part of the package, and if it fails, the whole thing fails. So hopefully people will realize, again, look at the big picture and support it.
Jennifer Burroughs asks, are term limits part of the plan, and what will it take to get them implemented?
Yeah. A lot of people we know term limits is very popular to the public. People who are in government, for the most part, know it's really not such a good idea because you don't have the benefit of the continuity. Having some people around who've been around for a while have some experience, and also a lot of new people. And we have a lot of turnover. But we did agree that there should be term limits for leaders. We've already passed it in the Senate, and there's a constitutional amendment necessary to pass it for both chambers. It's going to be introduced and voted on. It's just going to be voted on soon. It's not part of this package. But we've already done that in the Senate, and we've passed term limits for leaders.
This is a great question. I'm going to combine it. Kathy Moore and Ed Tracy from Roxbury Road Creative have asked a question I'm going to combine here. One, what is the greatest pressure coming to the senators, particularly to vote no on something? And then the other one is, thank you for speaking today. That's very nice of you. When you return next year, what are the three goals that you would like to report on?
Well, first of all, I'd like to report that I'm returning next year. Pam? Kathy Moore, was that
her? Yes, Kathy.
Former legislator, as I recall. There's people, I don't mean to beat up on the lobbyists. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing, but their job is not to look at the big picture. Their job is to represent a client. So, I mean, it's fine. I'm not offended. Just don't work so hard. tell your client, the Chamber of Commerce is against the package. The unions are against the package, you know. I mean, that's why we are here. We don't have a budget. And so we have to just make sure that people look at the big picture. And again, it's a small step. This is just the Senate. If we're able to be successful, hopefully this can be replicated in the House. And then we can reach an agreement. So I hope that answers the question.
We have a room full of everybody here. We've got corporate people, we've got not-for-profits, we have a lot of elected officials, and a few lobbyists also. Thank you so much, Senate President. This means so much for us to be here.
Thank you.